Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Joel, 30 years ago, 30 plus years ago, Jim Herd was executive vice president of WCW. He was the first person that Ted Turner hired to run WCW because he knew a little bit about professional wrestling, but had also run Pizza Hut. Jim Herd, thanks to a tie-in with TBS, introduced RoboCop, who participated in a wrestling angle with Sting. And here we are 30 plus years later on TBS, and they have a tie-in with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie, and we got an angle that involved another movie tie-in, another movie monster, and wrestlers running, well, Karen, at least, running and selling for it. It was a weird show. We had violence and blood and stomps and lights going out. We also had frivolity at an Outback Steakhouse, and Adam Cole with a tease that he isn't loyal to MJF after all, that I cannot figure out his motivation for doing. We can talk about that. I'll explain more later. Joel, what are your opening thoughts on a weird show?
I mean, where do you start with this, Wade? I mean, I have to credit Trevor Dame on Twitter, who said, man, the only explanation for this bizarre episode of Dynamite is Tony was just looking for a way to get people to stop talking about CM Punk and just have anything else to talk about with this show. I mean, this is, you know, it started out as any normal Dynamite with a nice match between Orange Cassidy and Wheeler Yuta, leads to an angle there. And it started, I want to say, slowly into this dissension, but it was kind of rather quickly. Things just started to snowball into one another, into one of the absolute just bizarre, baffling booked AEW Dynamite episodes. I mean, it's so hard to, I mean, where do you pick to start? I mean, you can talk about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Leatherface, but so many other just questionable booking decisions going into the, you know, one of the biggest wrestling shows in history, the biggest wrestling show, you know, that this promotion is, you know, probably ever going to put on, to be realistic. And just all these questionable decisions that are being made along the way, it just feels like a lot of, you know, the hesitancies that people had about AEW and the direction it was heading, some of the booking decisions, has really started to come to a head with a lot of things that are happening backstage. There's a lot of pressure for a new television deal. There's two huge events that they need to promote. We know most of the card for All In now, but All Out just feels like total leftovers, you know, from in comparison to All In. That, you know, there's just, AEW just needs the State of the Union right now as to what they want to be, you know, as a promotion, you know, who they're trying to appeal to. I think that this was the most staggering example of the differences between Dynamite and Collision. But, you know, this has not been a good direction that they've been heading. And this was, you know, the most prime example of some of these bad booking decisions just coming together.
Yeah, there's a lot to cover. As you're talking, like, oh, I want to comment on that. Oh, I want to comment on that. And there's just, it is weird. Honestly, there was just no quality control in terms of, like, you said, even the beginning match. I'll even start there. I mean, I kind of forgot about it as the show progressed, but it brought me back. You don't pile drive someone on a ramp and then have that be a mid-match transition spot. Like, really, you're to pile drove Orange Cassidy on a ramp, and credit to Orange Cassidy, because he is, like, say what you will about his gimmick, because, you know, it's a divisive gimmick, it's a polarizing gimmick, but he's really good, really smart, and he was selling his neck the rest of the match. So I was upset that it was a mid-match transition move. So I'm thinking back to, you know, Flair and Funk, a pile driver on a table, and it's just like this huge angle. It's the angle of the year, and people are talking about it months later. Then I'll just throw it out there as a transition move. And I know, you know, 6-8 years ago, I was on Steve Austin's show a lot, his podcast, and he lamented that the DDT had become a transition move and not a finisher. I know things move on. I don't think leaping in the air and driving somebody on the top of their skull, compressing their vertebrae, should be in the middle of a match. Like, you know, that's not even like really this big grudge match or anything like that. So,
sure.
But that's not even on my top 10 list, you know, of things to kind of...
I mean, that might be number 50 on the list.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. I mean, I saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Jeff Jarrett, Jeff Hardy. I'm like, why? Did they tell us why?
I mean, I hope they got good money for it, you know? I mean, but how is Tony not... How does he not see the resemblance to, you know, 2000 WCW and TNA? I mean, how does he not, or is it just like, it's cute, just throw it out there, you know, people will maybe be entertained by it, we made some money from the video game, but how does he not see that obvious comparison?
Yeah, it is, this felt...
He's smarter than that.
Yeah, but he's a fan of this stuff. I mean, he's a fan of you know, adrenaline rush, sort of, you know, this show came across like a 12-year-old's fantasy-booked TV show, where it's just like, if a 12-year-old took control, what would they do? Oh, we'll have Leatherface with a chainsaw. We'll dump blood over somebody. We'll have everybody bleed. We'll have everybody stomped into the mat. We'll do comedy at an Outback Steakhouse. And, like, it just was all over the place. And there was, I mean, the main event was the Bucks against the Guns. We got no promos, no setup. Did they even mention it? I mean, I guess they mentioned it with a little graphic in the corner early in the show. But, like, yeah. It just, you know, I mean, this was not CM Punk's week, you know, over the past week. A lot came out about him. I did a Wade Keller hotline focus on AEW Edition and went in-depth on that situation. I not only reported what I've heard, but also reacted to other reports out there, pushed back on some things that had been reported that conflicted with what my sources said that felt like it was coming out of Punk's camp in certain ways. But if you listen to me talk about the Punk Elite thing, I don't know that most people would I don't think there'd be unanimity about, oh, Wade's on this side or that side. Like, I don't think there's a lot of heroes in this situation. Mm-hmm. And I even think, you know, but I even defend Tony Khan to a degree. I mean, I think this is a really, he's in a really difficult position. He has this highly paid top draw who he's a big fan of, and there's no shame in being a promoter who's a big fan of wrestlers who you hire. And you know, you should be excited. And I think that's a feature, not a flaw. But he's in a tough situation dealing with this. He's created a show to just isolate Punk to try to get his money's worth out of him and get to this next big TV deal. He's got a lot of things going on. But when I say this wasn't Punk's week, this was Punk's night, because CM Punk and FTR and some other voices have really wanted Collision to be a different show than Dynamite. And I think they would enter this Dynamite into evidence as everything they're trying not to do. You know, the story came out about Jack Perry wanting to do, like, cut himself with real glass during an angle, and Punk is like, we don't, you know, do that. Or, we don't do that here. FTR is like, that's not, you know, that was in their locker room speech. We're not going to just do gratuitous violence just for the sake of it. And this show, you know, I mean, there's a reason that Collision is, like, this really enjoyable show, because they do, I mean, make stuff count when they do it. And this was just a blur of comedy and then violence and then, you know, a corny movie tie-in, and then a main event match that felt rushed and which had no hype, no chance to, you know, build to it, because it was just one thing after another, just one sugar rush after another sugar rush. And I'm sure there's some people who love this. I just don't think it's efficient or an effective way to utilize your wrestlers and build to an even bigger show. I mean, there were some positives about this show, and, you know, in isolation, there's some things that I'm sure people liked, but when you step back and look at the entirety of the show, it's just, I think people will remember this. And I think a lot of people will remember it as coming across as undisciplined or desperate, or I don't know, Joel, add to that or yeah.
Well, I mean, like, wait, have you posted any polls about this show at all? I mean, I would ask the question to people, you know, most people, you know, probably following the torch are probably already going to order All In, right? It's one of the biggest shows. But are you more, less, or neutrally excited about now that you've seen the card and you've seen the promotion to the show? Like, how do you feel about going into their biggest show? Because I would say I'm definitely less excited. And it's not about so much about the card. I mean, we know that probably the card is going to be very entertaining show. There's going to be a lot of really good matches. But, man, isn't it about the hype to those big shows and trying to get people as excited as possible for the – I mean, they're going to have big reactions. I don't know exactly how it's going to do on pay-per-view. But, man, I mean, it is just kind of sucking the air. You know, I had this promotion, just a lot of these decisions that are being made here that, like you said, Collision just comes off as a much more disciplined show. They make these things matter. I mean, I took out a quote here. Let's see. Excalibur said after the Jeff Hardy and Jeff Jarrett thing, you know, it's one of the most bizarre matches we've ever seen in All Elite Wrestling. And you know, Tony's like, I think we're going to have to go further back than that, you know, and then they just kind of move off that and they go up next, but the Bunny versus Britt Baker. You know, I get it too. You just want to move off that stuff, but it's like this weirdly just paced show where it's just like none of this stuff really matters. We're just kind of on to the next thing to get the crowd reactions. I mean, I've just been following AEW over the last few months, and there's just been a shift in a lot of the philosophy of this, where it was a lot of booking really good matches and wanting to have good matches, and they had some really good stories. And now it's a lot of just trying to, if it's getting a good crowd reaction, then let's go with it. It's good. You know, like MJF during his promo, and he cut a fabulous promo. His babyface promo that he did was fabulous. But before that part, you know, what do you say, kangaroo kick? And he's going to that Chris Jericho territory of just out there and see if you can get anything over with the crowd because you just have this, you know, charisma that you can just kind of do anything. You know, and MJF's really not even the one we should be picking on for this show. But, I mean, there's just such this mentality of just go out there as long as it gets a reaction from the fans. You know, it's entertaining. It's bombastic. It's all good stuff, you know. And really, to me, it's not, because – it's hard to follow along to each of these characters and have that emotional investment. I mean, with Adam Cole, one of the big things for me is that he starts, and I get it, it's very much seeming like he's going to be turning heel soon, you know, turn on MJF. But there was a very serious thing that did happen to him. And he had that concussion that really did almost lead to the end of his career. I mean, the guy was talking about how he couldn't drive without almost needing to vomit, or if he did throw up. Because he's just so, you know, that affected him so much, and he's trying to draw in some real emotion into this match. And it's just like, he's not getting that reaction from the crowd that he wants. He's not getting it from me watching at home, because we just watched them go to Outback Steakhouse and do the Crocodile Dundee and tackle, you know, an inflatable alligator, you know. And I get that a lot of stuff is entertaining. It's fun. Never seen it before. You've heard that type of stuff before, bro. And, you know, we just can't – that's just not what's going to lead to the best, most emotional investment into this stuff. Some people can say it's just wrestling, but, man, that it's not the wrestling that I'm looking for. And clearly, a lot of people that I talk to and see on Twitter, it's not what they're looking for either.
The dumbest thing anybody can say in response to a show that people are critical of is it's only wrestling. A lot of wrestling promoters have gone out of business saying it's only wrestling, bro. Wrestling is an art form, and there's successful promoters and unsuccessful promoters. And the ones who say it's only wrestling do not succeed. They lose money. Not that Tony Khan would ever say that, but anybody who's come back against articulated critiques of pro wrestling. Anyone who would say that just needs to be ignored, really. Okay, so much on the table. We'll kind of slow down, go more of a Collision pace instead of a Dynamite pace as we analyze things going forward. We've got emails. Our switchboard is back up and running after it was down over the past week. So we're glad that appears to be fixed, and we'll get confirmation of that as we bring people onto the show. We've got an on-site correspondent planned for later who attended in person. I look forward to talking to Brad about that. And just so much more to talk about. But let's pause and let's formally introduce ourselves here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, August 16th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and the website pwtorch.com. Hope you're checking that out every day for breaking news, live TV and PLE and pay-per-view coverage, editorials, special features, flashbacks, 10 and 20 years ago flashbacks, which I know I have fun pulling those out of our archives and rereading them, and I think you will too. House shows and TV reviews from 10, 15, and 20 years ago posted regularly throughout the week too from our archives. So PWTorch.com is our website, and this is one of our podcasts. Search Wade Keller on your podcast app to subscribe to this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, covering Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision every week with live post shows that we live stream at WadeKellerPostShow.com, which most people then download off our podcast feed afterwards. Search Wade Keller to subscribe. We also have a blue logo show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, as opposed to the post show. When you search Wade Keller, subscribe to the blue logo show too. Tomorrow, Todd Martin will be my co-host. We'll be simulcasting the VIP show, The Fix, as the flagship this week, as we do roughly every 3 weeks. So be on the lookout for that Thursday night. The second half of August is going to be a big month for AEW with All In and 80,000 plus, and they talked about that. And boy, it'd be nice to be talking about that more than all this other stuff. And I know when you have network partners, you make compromises. And but yeah, going back to the RoboCop tie-in over 3 decades ago, and then here we are talking about Leatherface and a random Texas Chainsaw Massacre match. I don't know. Anyway, the other voice you hear is Joel Donnell. He is a PWTorch.com contributor over the years. He was an early co-host covering Dynamite and has written about AEW for PWTorch.com. And he is back in the rotation, back in the mix. And Joel, it's great to have you here to talk about tonight's episode. They certainly gave us a lot to talk about. Welcome.
Oh, thanks so much, Wade. I need the therapy tonight after watching all that. I mean, it's just it's what I needed, talking to one of the best experts out there. This is always such a thrill to talk about Dynamite, and, you know, I just want to do so much more and, you know, just contribute to the website, you know, all that.
Well, very good. We have, callers already on hold, and you can join them. Our phone number, if you want to be on the show, is, 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That will flag you on our switchboard so we know you want to be brought onto the show. You can also email us if you're live streaming the show right now and you don't want to call, but you do want to contribute, WadeKellerPodcast@PWTorch.com. If you're listening to our show on delay because you got to get to bed early or, you know, we've got other things to do after wrestling, no problem. You can email us during or within a few minutes after the shows air, Dynamite, Collision, SmackDown, and Raw, and then listen back the next day and see if your email was read on the air. Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. Okay, Joel, we got so much we can talk about. You did ask about a poll, prowrestling.net. Jason Paul always puts up a poll on his website after TV shows. And right now, not a ton of votes in, but 42% grading it an F, 37% grading it a D, 11% calling it average, 5% say it was good, and 5% say it was great. Small sample size so far, but we'll keep refreshing that and get an update. But so far, negative reviews for the show. Now, Jason Powell is in his TV reports, is not an apologist for AEW, so maybe he drives away the AEW apologists from voting in his polls. I'm curious to talk to our on-site correspondent to get an idea of what the broader paying audience seemed to think of this show. Did they get wrapped up in the moment and seem to like it, or were they rolling their eyes and getting restless? We shall see. But, man, this was quite the show. All right. Let's just get to calls and emails, and then we can, in between and afterwards, add anything that we don't get to. We will start with Jay in Michigan. He is up first. Jay, thanks so much for calling. What's on your mind about tonight's Dynamite?
Thanks for having me, guys. So, you know, I've called in a few times on Dynamite. You know, Wade, I mentioned I'm not a huge, huge Dynamite AEW watcher, but when I watch Dynamite, man, as a wrestling fan, I really, really, like, want AEW to do well, you know, just as a pure wrestling fan. I mean, I've been a WWE fan my entire life, but when I watch AEW, I see all of the pieces are there, but Dynamite just, I mean, what the hell are they doing, man? Like, when I watch Collision, and I enjoy Collision, and I try to, like, factor that into a wrestling schedule because we got so many different things to watch. But with Dynamite, it's just like, man, I just see no cohesion, and I see all of the talent, but I mean, like, I just don't understand what they're doing most of the time, man. I don't even have a pure take about the overall show, anything in particular, but just my feeling is that, like, why is there such a huge difference between Collision, which is like a cohesive show, and Dynamite just seems to be all over the place?
Yeah, well, I mean, Tony Khan is deliberately trying to do a different show, you know, on Saturdays versus Wednesdays. I mean, both are visions of Tony Khan. Both are booked by Tony Khan. He just is trying two different things. And Wednesday is you know, yeah, less disciplined, less structured. And Collision kind of goes, obviously, against his initial instincts of what a wrestling show can and should be. But he's got other voices that he's listening to, and he wants to differentiate the shows. And he has succeeded in that sense. The shows do feel differentiated. And like I said, this was not a great week for CM Punk PR-wise, although I think there is, you know, definitely a CM Punk side to some of the things that are going on. But that only extends so far. Well, that's a whole other topic, and I got into it on the Wade Keller Hotline. So go VIP, everybody, pwtorch.com/goVIP. You can get 20-plus minutes of analysis of that. But I think Punk and FTR would probably, you know, sit back and go, yeah, this is the type of thing we're trying to steer away from and identify, create an identity for Collision that is distinct from this extreme version of Dynamite, which I think, you know, obviously just from a gimmick standpoint goes against what FTR and CM Punk tend to stand for. And in real life, it does too. Anything more you want to add, Joel, before I throw back to Jay?
Yeah, I mean, you get all this, a lot of their major stars are going to be on Dynamite, you know, and most of Collision is built around FTR, CM Punk, and, you know, some other people that they're trying to build up. And it's just interesting to see how the show that has all the stars on it, I mean, if it doesn't have the booking to back it up, it's, you know, it pales in comparison to the show that maybe, you know, they're trying to build up Powerhouse Hobbs, Ricky Starks, some of these guys who haven't really seen the main event level, you know, traditionally. But that show is just becoming more and more enjoyable because it has that level of consistency. It's starting to understand who it is, what they're trying to be, in the direction that they're going with that show versus this one, which is just all over the place.
Yeah. All right, Jay, I'll throw it back to you if you have any follow-up on any of this.
Yeah, so I feel like Collision, and I mentioned this a couple weeks ago, Ray, when I called in for a Saturday show, like, Collision feels to me like very SmackDown-ish circa 2016 when they did the brand split. Like, I feel like they're really, really trying to put on the best show, while Dynamite kind of feels like Raw did at that point. I mean, even though Raw was never as all over the place, it just didn't feel like a very good show for several years by comparison to SmackDown, regardless of what the ratings say. You know, that's, I just feel like with Collision, it just feels like it's like their mentality to me feels like, you know, very like bunkered in on like, we're going to make our show the best show that we could possibly make it. And they're looking at Dynamite like competition, whereas Dynamite just feels like, hey man, we're the A show here. We just do what we want to do. And I mean, is that do you feel like that's a leadership thing? You know, from the you know, obviously CM Punk is the face of Collision, and from what I've heard you report, and it seems obviously pretty logical, like CM Punk is kind of trying to be the locker room leader there and really put together as much as he might despise the company. It feels very much like a WWE type show as opposed to Dynamite. I don't really know. I mean, I would assume Jericho's a locker room leader, but it does not feel like the show is like has great internal leadership from the group that is in place. And you know, like if we're looking at the Bucks and Kenny, you know, those guys never been or never wanted to be in WWE to my knowledge. So like they just had that indie style approach to everything, and it doesn't ever feel like they're really, really like competing to be the premier show, the premier company. Would I be like kind of on base with that? And like there, do you feel like there is a lack in leadership from internal talent on Dynamite as opposed to Collision?
Joel, what do you say to what Jay says there? How would you characterize it?
Yeah, I don't know as far as, like, the wrestlers and the leadership and what that dynamic all looks like on both those shows. But certainly what we've alluded to is that there is a more of a uniformity when you watch the Collision show, that it knows what it is. You know, and if that is CM Punk, FTR setting the tone for the rest of the locker room, I mean, then they certainly know how to keep everything in line and keep it consistent. Whereas when you watch Dynamite, which, as I mentioned before, is the show with the bigger stars that we've seen in much higher places and other promotions, you just get this feeling of, like, everyone there is kind of, you know, they're into their character, they're into their segment, you know, and they're going to get themselves over, get over their segment, but there's not any cohesion as to, you know, like when wrestlers would talk about, like, well, don't blade in this match because I'm going to do this later on, or don't do this thing, you know, and have some of that collaboration and talking with each other so that there is a cohesion throughout the rest of the show. It's just kind of like everyone's doing their own thing.
Yeah, there's no question Collision is meant to be a counter to what we see on Wednesday nights with Dynamite. And the goal is to differentiate it. And Collision has the advantage of saying, all right, there's Dynamite. We're gonna contrast that. But Dynamite does – there's a number of people who consider themselves locker room leaders in Dynamite, but it doesn't have that kind of singular vision. It's both shows are Tony Khan's show, but obviously Dynamite is Tony Khan's firstborn and the one that reflects, you know, I think what most he wants to see in a wrestling show or what he thinks most will succeed. Again, I don't want to, like, you know, I want to pause and say this is not like a typical Dynamite. It was a conglomeration, Joel, of a lot of things about Dynamite that people are critical of, and frankly, aspects that some people really like, but I don't know if they need it in quite this dose. And certainly not every aspect of it is what people are looking for. Sometimes things stand out more when there's more of a baseline of things that are more grounded and paced well, and this lacked pacing and felt a little gratuitous at times in a lot of different ways. Jay, I'll throw to you for some closing words, and then we'll move on to other contributors here.
Yeah, I think that you guys, you know, kind of answered and summarized my question. And I guess maybe I'm just so conditioned in the WWE style, not saying that WWE does everything right. As you know, Wade, I've called and been very critical of multiple things when it comes to WWE on my typical night of Friday when I call in. But I guess I'm just conditioned in the WWE style, right or wrong, better or worse, and Collision gives me more of I tell you as a wrestling fan. And I guess AEW is for, you know, the people that love that brand of wrestling.
All right, Jay, I appreciate your thoughts. We'll talk to you soon, I'm sure.
Yeah.
All right, cool. We will now move to Hendrick in Portland. Hendrick, welcome to the show. What are your thoughts on this episode of Dynamite?
Oh, wow. That was something else. Like, I really didn't expect that. Like, I feel like I'm in a time slip. We were, you know, in a WCW Thunder episode or a TNA 2012 episode. Like, I don't even know. But it's
funny. I was
going to
say 2010, 2011.
Yeah, okay. sounds about right. Like, wow. But... like, the actual stuff I wanted to talk about, this is like pales in comparison of the debacle that was, but this is a fairly large topic. So Will Ospreay was on the show tonight, if you can
think about all the things that we could be talking about if they didn't have so many things going on. Like, you know, there's the old Kevin Dunn thing in WWE I heard once where he goes, we want everyone thinking about 2.5 things when a show is over. There's two major points and then this other thing maybe. Nothing more. Like, everything else is just, it's laying groundwork, it's dropping hints, it's planting seeds, it's entertaining people to hold the audience, but it's all there to emphasize these two major things and one other thing, but not as much. And Will Ospreay should have been one of those things, right? Or it could have been. But I had, like, forgotten he was even on the show until you just mentioned his name because so much that was thrown at us. Hendrick, go back to you. I know I jumped in there.
Well, I was just going to say, like, so I was, you know, hoping he was going to be involved at the All-In show in Wembley, you know, being his hometown. And, you know, he's, I think, deserves, like, a big, to be on that huge stage there. So do you think he's being utilized well with Chris Jericho? Do you think that is a All-In Wembley match, or is it a thing to get Chris Jericho over?
I don't have a problem with the match. Joel, how about you?
Yeah, I think that'll be a fine match. Will Ospreay's going to give it his all being at Wembley, you know, Wembley Stadium. I mean, this is going to be one of the biggest things for him, and Jericho gets to be put in a spotlight. I just have more of an issue with how that segment all played out. You know, with Don Callis being out there, Jericho, you know, leads him to believe last week that he's going to join Don Callis' family, and then he goes out there, he gives them misdirection, and then he says, yes, I'm going to join your team. And, you know, then he asks about this, what's that poster that you have over there? And, I mean, why would Don have that? I mean, there's no reason for that poster to be there or to be made except for exactly what it was used for, as the one little prop for Chris Jericho to go, hey, what's that? Oh, well, that's a funny picture. Oh, it's Don Callis holding up Chris Jericho's head. Well, why would you have that, Don? And then devolving into, you know, him going from face to heel for a second and then back to babyface. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. That's like, well, that just doesn't make any sense. Like, Don had no reason to believe that he wouldn't join the family, given what happened last week of the Jericho Appreciation Society leaving Chris Jericho and then going right to Don saying, yeah, I'm going to give my response next week. There was no reason for him to believe that he wouldn't join, or am I missing something?
No, there wasn't. A slightly but significantly improved version of that would have been, there was a painting, and it was Don Callis and Jericho together as friends, arm in arm, a painting of them smiling, but there was a corner peeling away. And Jericho's like, what's this? And Callis's like, no, don't do that. And Jericho peels it away. And then the thing that we saw with the beheaded Jericho is behind it. And then Callis could be like, oh, I was just preparing for both scenarios, Chris, you know, like something like that. And like, mm-hmm. And again, I'm not even saying I would love that idea, but I certainly think it makes more sense that Callis would have an A plan and a B plan, and Jericho would kind of discover it, and then Callis's plan is foiled to kind of have this thing that he's going to reveal. Especially then you can imagine, you know, that if Jericho would accept it, Callis was actually going to turn on him and pull the cord and go, I've got you. I always plan to turn on you, whatever. So again, I'm not even saying I love that idea, but I think that's like, you can imagine that making sense. I also don't like when someone turns babyface because they wanted to be aligned with the heel, but the heel said no. You know, so the authority with Seth Rollins was an instance where that happened, and it just other really damaged Seth Rollins. You don't want somebody turning babyface because they wanted to be aligned with the heel, but the heel said, and then that leads to fans supposedly having a reason to cheer the newly turned babyface who is only there because, yeah, it just seems like, you know, when you talk about locker room leadership and great wrestling minds, that kind of detail matters. It really does. Same thing with Adam Cole. How are we supposed to, in our minds, what are we supposed to imagine is going through Adam Cole's head when on national television in front of a huge crowd on a TV show that MJF's going to watch back and be told about is teasing that he's going to attack MJF from behind?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, why would he do that? One, he chose not to. But he showed his hand that it's something he's thinking about. So the whole story has been Adam Cole and MJF love each other. Adam Cole totally ended up siding with MJF in a way that he didn't expect and hitting it off with him. And they haven't done anything to make, well, they've done almost nothing to make you think that this friendship isn't genuine. And that the payoff to it isn't that it's not predictable that they're going to turn on each other. The payoff is you tell a good story so that it's believable that neither would see it coming if the other turned on them. And now they've ruined it because MJF will find out in the next 9 days that Adam Cole stood behind him and thought of kicking him, which makes no sense because why would Adam Cole not want the element of surprise? He wants to win the ROH tag team titles. That's his dream. Is that a lie or what? What's the advantage if we're to put ourselves in Adam Cole's place for him to turn on him, to even consider, much less to consider it or do it, to turn on MJF before a title at the world title that's at stake, where he can catch MJF by the eyes. I just don't get it. Like, you've got to put yourself, when you book these angles, in the heads of everybody in the who's involved, and their actions have to be consistent with what they logically would do. And maybe I'm missing something, Joel, but I don't see that either. And it's just it's just sloppiness left and right. And like you said, the Jericho thing, both the point you made and the point I made about the Jericho thing undercuts that turn. Now the MJF Cole thing, I think, is spoiled a bit, because now you're showing your hand in a way that this doesn't make, it doesn't make any sense from a booking standpoint for drama. It doesn't make any sense Cole would do that. It's a bummer, you know, that kind of thing just slips by. I don't really know what the defense is for it, Joel.
I mean, that's your main event of the biggest show at Wembley Stadium. Oh, my God. Like, come on now. Like, just button that stuff up. But it goes back to my earlier point of they're just trying to get these chants over and get these little things over and the hug it out. That's all that was there for. It's just for people to chant hug it out. You know, and it's become so much of this audience participation of get them to chant these goofy things and, you know, get them engaged that way instead of just having some good drama, a good story being told back and forth. It's always being relied upon to have these goofy sayings and things like that. And that's just not what I'm looking for. And I feel like it really undercuts something that could be a really well-told story of Adam Cole coming back, and it's his dream to win the championship on the biggest show that he thought he was not going to be able to even come back to wrestle from. And MJF, it just gets so caught up in being the champion and being friends with Adam Cole. And you don't need to have all of the Outback Steakhouse and the Crocodile Dundee and all those things happening, that there is another way to tell that stuff that can be, you know, maybe it's not as funny or memeable, or you can't create some weird gifs and talk about it or make a t-shirt about it. You know, maybe you can't do all that stuff with it, but I feel that you can get a better emotional investment, that you can get people more interested and exciting about the next chapter. You're not just building to the next show, but you're thinking about those next chapters coming down the line. When AEW started, one of the cool things is that you could really think about who are the next champions, who are the next challengers coming up for their next pay-per-views. And right now it's like, I don't really know. I mean, what's going to be on All Out? Somebody tell me what's going to be on All Out. Right now they just have Luchasaurus and Darby Allin, and their only other matches that could possibly happen is Hobbs versus Miro, and now we have the House of Black versus maybe the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn. And is that really going to get you excited to then go spend another $50 a week after All In? I mean, I just don't think it's that difficult to do that. I mean, but that's all they have going for the show after All In.
Hendrick, I'll throw back to you for a follow-up or an additional topic.
Well, I mean, you mentioned little things that bothered you. Like, I don't recall, like, Tony Khan actually being involved with, like, the little skits backstage, like the goofy stuff. And for whatever reason, Tony Khan's office was in a hallway of other offices, and that made me so, like, pissed off. I was like, you can see the other doors. He's just,
I know.
His office is in a hallway.
He has to know, right?
Yeah, not even in the top 50 list for me on this show of things where I would have, you know, tweaked or augmented things, but I did notice it too. Tony's got, you know, double layer to get to them, you know, this hallway that leads to, or a room that leads to other rooms, or a hallway that leads to other rooms. It was just a weird choice.
All right. Well, yeah, I mean, you forgot Will Ospreay was on the show. I'm going to mention someone else that you probably totally forgot was on the show, who I wanted to talk about, who's Nick Wayne. And Nick Wayne, you know, being from the Pacific Northwest where I am, I've actually seen the guy wrestle for years, even though he's only 18 years old, through like the five shows and even seen him at GCW shows. But what do you think of Nick Wayne's introduction to the company and how he's doing so far?
Joel, 31st.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a unique way. What they've done is, you know, they scouted out this young talent, and then as soon as he turned the age of 18, he brought him on. And I think that's cool to get somebody in at a young age. But, you know, there is also a risk there that we've seen with other really young talent that they've brought in, you know, before they became more of the polished product that they're going to be at some point. And I hope that he just doesn't take a ton of losses. You know, I mean, he probably views him as somebody where, yeah, he'll pay his dues right now. He'll take some losses. And then someday, you know, he'll get more polished up and get some more wins. But right now, I really like the idea of that he, you know, acknowledging Defy, you know, as a promotion there and some of the people who have come from there, including Darby Allin and Swerve, and trying to work that into an angle with them. You know, I didn't have much of an issue with this match. You know, we got to see the high spots from Darby, got to see a lot of high spots from Nick Wayne. He's not the totally polished product yet, but man, for his age, he is darn good. I mean, he is really, really good. You know, this was only the first match where one of the teams got attacked from behind before the match, you know, and you know, some other stuff. And I was just really happy that there wasn't a distraction finish, even though Fox and Swerve came out. But man, talk about the bizarre stuff. We got Joker Sting again. I mean, talk about this TNA stuff and having to be aware of this. I mean, what was that? What was that all about? You know, why do we need Joker Sting before Wembley Stadium? We're talking about the possibility of maybe this could be Sting's last match. Maybe this could be the Great Muta type send off. Instead, we're getting Joker Sting.
Yeah, it was cringy, the Sting thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't dislike everything about the Joker Sting era, but man, that facial expression that he had right before Prince Nana ran off, and I didn't think it had a real cohesive message. It felt out of nowhere. Like, hey, I have an idea. How about I do revisit Joker Sting? Sure, yeah, whatever you like, Sting. Like, well, yeah. No, what is it part of something larger? Are we going to explain the context? This is not exactly, you know, Hogan Andre legendary. It's something that, you know, I don't know how many people watching Dynamite now saw that, and if they did, I still think they would want context, and they would want to know why suddenly he's becoming acting like that. So another just, yeah, it was a cringy moment. Plenty of cringy moments on this show, actually. Hendrick, I think that Nick Wayne and Darby is a good team, and I like the storyline. I think it's actually one of the more grounded, better things that they're doing right now. You could argue the follow-up to the attack at his, you know, in his home, his ring in the garage or whatever, deserves something a little more substantial on a show that was less crowded, more of a recap, you know, setting it up with a promo, having Nick Wayne's demeanor, you know, match the moment, and the announcers have the time to really drive home, you know, the level of revenge that he's seeking against Prince Nana's group and Swerve's group. And it just didn't have breathing space for that. So it turned into a match where what you remember are dives. That's what you remember. You don't have emotions. You remember dives. So, I mean, yeah, wrestling sells tickets when people are emotionally invested, and it just dissipates when, you know, you're out there just having a match where what you remember are dives instead of the emotional follow-up to a really hardcore beatdown angle that preceded it. Hendrick, back to you for any follow-up.
All right, and the one last thing I have to ask, do you think the Leatherface Championship belt will be defended at All In?
Maybe All Out.
Yeah, they're gonna need some matches. It didn't even look like a very good leather face mask. It looked like the cheap thing you buy at the knockoff store. I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, it didn't look
belt.
Official.
They had a belt, a leather face belt, at championship belt at the end. Like, that's the last thing they should possibly ever have is another belt. I'm like, good God. All right. That's all from me.
thanks, Hendrick. Well, next week, Jack Thank Perry's you. Retiring the FTW title. I love Taz just going, no, he's doing what? All right. Let's go to Jordan in Kentucky next. Jordan, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Well, we attended, and I enjoyed it, but there were some moments that it was kind of questionable. You know, the Joker Sting thing, I thought, what the hell is going on here? I didn't watch Joker Sting back when that was going on. I'm kind of new to wrestling, but you know, it was a fun show. There were things like there were a lot of jump ins, you know, a lot of saves. They did that a lot. I kind of overdid that, to tell you the truth. But the Leatherface thing at the end, I really didn't enjoy that match. I don't understand the Leatherface thing. Don't know what was going on with it. What was that?
We don't know. They didn't tell us. They just put it on social media. Obviously, there was a you know, tie-in to promote a movie. We saw the movie posters, but
it was
they
a
didn't.
Video game.
Oh, it's a video game. Oh, I.
It's a video game.
Oh, I have.
Yep.
That's how out of the loop I am.
Oh,
okay. So it's.
Okay.
It's and what a just how they didn't give us context. It just started being advertised. Why, Jeff Jarrett? I mean, you knew it was going to be awful when you saw it, you know, like the hype for it. But, God, like, everybody getting involved and Matt Hardy pouring a bucket of red goo over Jeff and, I mean,
you know, whenever they walk backstage and you start seeing some other, like, some red lights or anything like that, you know it's going nowhere good. You know that whatever's to follow is just going to be awful. Whenever you start seeing the lights or start seeing the weapons that are just conveniently placed somewhere out there, oh, man, you just know this cannot be good.
Yeah. And, you know, you got wrestlers like Sutton and Singh where all he can do is he chokeslam. That's it. That's all he does. That's all he can do. Other than that, he does really nothing. I mean, he just pushes people around and then chokeslams them. You know, that is supposed to be, you know, when he does that, it's pretty much over. But I was disappointed, you know, that Jeff Hardy lost or Jeff Hardy's team. But I really enjoyed Jeff Hardy going, you know, taking Jarrett through the table. I love that little bit where they were taking Jarrett around with punch by punch by punch. You know, before Jay Lethal and Sutton Singh, you know, hopped in the ring. But I was really enjoying that. The crowd was pretty good most of the time. You know, it was just the hard cam side was empty. The rest of it was pretty full, you know. And they had a nice crowd. So that sometimes does not come across on TV. Because we've been to other events where the crowd was just super loud, and you guys, it didn't come across on TV. And, I mean, they're putting more effort into things like their fireworks. Because we saw them early on, and, you know, basically it was like lighting sparklers. And so they're putting more effort into that. It's a little louder. And even the microphones are a little louder. And it was great whenever Don Callis couldn't get a word in. That was awesome. It was like Dominic Mysterio. they just would not let him talk. And the crowd was just super pumped to just not let him talk. And, you know, of course, Jericho ended up getting the painting through the head. But, you know, a couple weeks ago you guys were talking about Raw and SmackDown and the storylines and how things came together. And I've been watching that and noticing, you know, that you're right. The storylines sometimes in AEW are kind of all over the place. And you don't really know where they're going, but you love the spot, and that's what they're about. They're about the big spot, and you know, they've got some great athletes, and you know, so you guys are dead on about that. But I really enjoy the athletes. While we have gone to more AEW events. But we have gone to a couple of Raw, SmackDowns. We're going again in September to, are we going to SmackDown or Raw? We're going to, oh, we're going to Fastlane. Yeah, we're going to Fastlane.
Ah, okay. None of the
yeah. So, yeah, it'll be fun. We went to SummerSlam yet last year, so that was pretty fun. It was
well, Jordan,
great.
Jordan, let me ask you about tonight and what you think the crowd was most into and what was the crowd least into, you know, the two or three things that come to mind in each category.
Wow. Most into MJF. He was big.
Yeah.
They're you know, looking at the shirt, there was more MJF shirts than anybody. I mean, there wasn't a lot of shirts out there. Now, so the crowd got really pumped up for him. They got pumped up for Adam Cole. You know, they got pumped up. What surprised me was there was a chant for Bunny for a while. Over DMD, and then DMD, whenever she picked it up, the crowd went to her side. And that's a funny thing about AEW is that they give the heel, they give them some respect, and then they turn on them real quick. And it's odd, you know, because in Raw or SmackDown in WWE, the heel's a heel. And the baby face is a baby face, you know. So it's a little different. I'm trying to remember. The crowd was really into the Jericho Don Callis, really into that. Oh, yeah, the first match they were really in. We got there a little bit late. So, but Orange Cassidy, they were really, really into Orange Cassidy. And, you know, and then Darby Allin, they were into him and Nick, you know. That everybody's curious about what that 17, 18-year-old kid can do. He looks athletic. He looks like he belongs right now, as young as he is. I mean, you know, he's not going to be like WWE material. WWE, their guys are more muscle. You know, it's like they're about more muscle, and AEW, they're about more spots. You know, that's kind of how I see
yeah.
it anyway. But
yeah,
AEW has and with Dynamite, they have made strides. They are getting better. I've enjoyed it a little better each time. And the Raw and SmackDown, I remember the last time I called, we had attended a Raw event. And I just didn't like, I was disappointed because there were not names. All the names, you know, were not there. They had Gunther and Braun, but there were no names. Well, tonight I got to see names. And like the second event, AEW, I went to, we didn't get to see many names. Even though I had fun, there were no names. You know what I'm saying? Britt Baker was there.
Did you feel that the Bucks against the Guns was a worthy main event? Did the crowd, do you think, perceive it as a worthy main event for Dynamite?
I don't feel that way. I mean, they were into it a little bit with the Bucks, but the Guns are not really. They should have had, you know, the Blade and the other guy, the weird voice guy. I forget his name, but stand him. But they should have had those two. The Guns, man, every time I see them, I'm just kind of bored with them. But ass boys. What? Yeah. I absolutely love the Malachi Black group. And so it was really great to see them because I love seeing them. We're going to Collision Saturday, and, I hope they're there too. But I'm kind of wondering about Billy Gunn's boots. So, is Billy Gunn done? Because, Malachi Black whispered something in his ear, and
yeah.
Then he decided to retire, took the boots off. And then tonight they come, they show up, they hit the Acclaim, they hit them hard, knock them down, and they take Billy Gunn's boots. So are they going to want the boots back, or is Billy Gunn going to come back and want his own damn boots back, So,
Jordan, let me pause and throw to Joel on that, because I want to get Joel's thoughts on what they did with the Acclaim tonight, House of Black, Billy Gunn's boots, as Jordan brings up. Joel, your thoughts on the Billy Gunn storyline and what they're setting up with the Acclaim?
Yeah. What I'm thinking there is probably what I mentioned before, is that I think they're just leading to a 6-man tag, probably at All Out, where we'll have Billy Gunn come back, because people are clamoring actually to see Billy Gunn come back at his tender age of 50 something, I believe. I think that they're just gonna get him back in there, do the scissor me type thing, and people are going to be very excited for that. We saw that with Sting in the House of Black before, where the House of Black, they spit in Sting's face, and then he came back and had the kind of the black mark on his face and stuff. So I can see kind of a, not exactly the same as that, but something similar to where they get Billy Gunn to retire, just leading back to another match. So I think it was fine, as it was executed. I mean, that's what you're going to get, is the lights being turned out, turned back on for the Acclaim, which, Wade and I are not the biggest fans of at all. But it was just kind of wedged in there because I think it's, hey, we also got this other pay-per-view that people are going to be paying for a week afterwards. So, in addition to All In, we need to do some other things for All Out to keep the momentum trying to move in there.
All right. Very good. Jordan, any closing words from you before we move on? Anything else you want to share from your experience at the show? Anything off camera with Tony Khan or any other matches, maybe after Dynamite went off the air?
Yeah, after the show, Tony Khan came out. He said he was donating the proceeds to the fires. In Hawaii.
In Maui, yeah.
And I donated myself this morning. And it's a terrible tragedy. And, more people like Tony Khan, they should do things like that. And it was good to hear that he did that. That's all he said when he came out, He encouraged people to do that.
Did the crowd wildly cheer for Tony?
Not loudly, no. They just, he came on, people right off the bat, kind of listened, and then he, it's not a subject that people are going to cheer. He started in first thing about donating the proceeds, and then they cheered that, but kind of in a mild way. It's like, it's kind of a bummer what happened, and, So, but the crowd, they did cheer that.
Yeah.
But it was, an enjoyable show, and I have let my VIP lapse, and I'm going to try and get that back because I let it lapse. And you guys do a great job. I really think that with the knowledge that you guys put a lot of work into this, you do a great job, all you guys. Appreciate it.
Well, Jordan, I thank you so much for the kind words, and we'll certainly welcome you back as a VIP member, and you can start with the Wade Keller hotline from this week on that CM Punk situation if you want.
Yep, okay. See you after Collision.
All right, great.
Maybe. All right.
Oh, yes, yes.
You take care.
Yeah, check on in. Thank you. Yeah, I look forward to talking to you Saturday night, too.
Okay. I'll see you.
Great. All right, if you still want to call the show, you can. Our number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. We're now going to go to our official on-site correspondent for tonight, Brad, calling from Nashville after the event. Brad, welcome to the show. So good to talk to you.
Hey, Wade. It's an honor to be here.
Excellent. Thank you for taking time to talk to us. Yes, we can. You're a little hard to pick up. Are you in Bluetooth or on your phone?
Yeah, let me switch it over real quick.
Okay, is this better?
Oh, yeah, that's way better.
Okay, excellent. Wonderful.
Yeah, so we have questions for you. It was a weird show. We had, you know, Texas Chainsaw match and lots of blood lots that we've been talking about here for an hour. What stood out to you in terms of the live experience on the show? Was it in line with what you expected? If not, better or worse than why? We'll just kind of get that broad macro sense first.
Yeah, first off, I thought it was a really wonderful time until the chainsaw match. Like, I just kind of felt like I was really paying attention to everyone around me and seeing reactions, and it just everyone felt invested and into it. And then the chainsaw match happened.
Yeah.
And then I, in a macro sense, the chainsaw match was awful. And then I felt like the Britt match was just, it just kind of felt like nothing happened. And then things after Britt picked up. So it's kind of like that mid-show lull, but everything else was really enjoyable, I thought.
How would you rank the top stars of the show? Who got the biggest star reactions?
I've got to say Eddie Kingston had the biggest pop of the night.
Interesting.
When his music hit and he came out, I mean, the whole place blew up. And I mean, I was excited. And it doesn't seem like Eddie's been on TV all that much the last few months. So it was surprising that everybody went crazy for Eddie.
Yeah.
And, of course, MJF and Adam Cole was also just, I think, the highlight of the night for everybody. I think that story has just really taken on a life of its own and surprised me and exceeded my expectations. And it's really cool to see everybody just so crazy about those two guys.
How organic was the kangaroo kick chant, and how many times did it get going?
The kangaroo kick was immediately over, and I don't know how the sort of vignette played with the Outback Steakhouse, but people were just eating up everything Cole and MJF were throwing out. And I just, as somebody who's been paying attention and thinking like the Cole and MJF thing after that first match was kind of just like, okay, is this over and done with? And then sort of rolling my eyes when they were matched up as a tag team. I mean, I'm just in kind of shock of how excited I am to see their match it all in and just really see where everything goes. I mean, I was catching myself thinking, I was like, you know, I've watched AEW since the beginning, and I feel like I've kind of been able to telegraph the title situation aside from, you know, Punk and everything. But it kind of feels now, it's like, I have no idea where this is going, and I can't wait to see what happens.
I want to delve into the Texas Chainsaw scene a little bit. What didn't work? I'll just ask, what didn't work about it for the crowd?
Okay, so there was no sound at all. Like, they started off backstage, and I had actually run to the restroom, and I came back, and it was like, I had heard Jeff Hardy's music hit, and he kind of came out through the crowd. I don't know if you guys saw this. And then he just went immediately back through this door. And there was no sound with the video, and there's no commentary, so it was really tough to tell what was going on. And it was like there's all these just people entering the fray, and it was like there was just no context, and it was a mess. And you know, and then to cap it all off, once they got out there, it was a little better. And then that chainsaw guy came out, and it was just like, come on, like this is terrible.
Yeah, this is a
Tony Khan came out after Dynamite and was like, all the money we made from the chainsaw match went to the Maui Food Bank. So I guess there is some good that came of all that, but it was rough.
Yeah, yeah, that has been a theme of our show so far. I mean, we got to see, you know, commentary and all the camera angles and stuff, but, you know, when a match goes backstage and, you know, Jeff Hardy just, you know, wandering off is never a good thing because you're like, is that scripted or is he just wandering off? Like, I mean, so I don't know.
One question I had is, did they cut to a commercial during that match?
Ooh, good question.
Yes, there was a picture-in-picture.
Yeah.
Okay,
so we saw all of it before.
They were endlessly walking down the hallway. So there, it was just a dark hallway that Karen and Jeff were walking down, and then they were in picture-in-picture the whole time.
Yeah, because there was, like, just darkness and kind of a hallway, and I was kind of, like, looking around at people saying, like, are we in a commercial? Like, what in the world is going on? Even just a little bit of sound or just some kind of context to what was happening would have really helped. Definitely a terrible mess.
And like, why is this match happening? Well, you know, like, what's the presupposition for a Texas Chainsaw Massacre match on Dynamite between Jeff Jarrett and Jeff Hardy? I mean, it's not. I assume that wasn't even explained to the crowd.
Yeah, I think the other thing that sort of frustrated me is, I Jeff Jarrett has kind of won me over in the last year or two. Like, I love his podcast and I am just impressed with what he's done because when he came out on AEW the first time, I just was like, oh, my God, here we go. And I just kind of feel like he has really outkicked his coverage ever since. And so seeing him in Nashville and doing that was really, really disappointing for me personally.
Yeah, it was a mess. Joel, jump in with a question.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to keep adding to this with the Jeff Jarrett and the Texas Chainsaw match. So, Wade, you found your first Jeff Jarrett fan here. And I just wanted to know, like, what is the, you know, what is the feeling with Jeff Jarrett in Nashville, Tennessee area? Because obviously one of the reasons they brought this match, you know, not the specific stipulation, but they put Jeff Jarrett in it because they're in Nashville. And I just want to know, like, is he somebody in that market is he viewed as like this local guy that everybody loves there? Or is it just somebody who, you know, because he's got the guitar and he's got the affiliation with Tennessee that, you know, they just keep putting him out there? Like, what is the fan feeling with this guy in the market?
I can only speak for myself, and I think it's 2023, and I remember seeing Jeff Jarrett doing his, you know, vignettes on Broadway for the Double J character, and it impresses me, his longevity. I mean, he's in great shape, and he's found a way to remain relevant, and I mean, I took a big, long break from wrestling and never saw any of his TNA stuff, so that doesn't cloud my judgment, but I guess I kind of respect the guy for still remaining relevant somehow. And full disclosure, I do have mutual friends with his late father. So I guess I kind of like Jeff just because I sort of have a personal connection to his family, but that's really removed from my fandom. But.
Yeah. Go ahead, Joel. Do you have anything else you want to bring up or follow up on?
Just asking about the crowd enthusiasm. I mean, after that match, I mean, definitely over TV, it just felt like the enthusiasm just started to really go down after that. Can you just talk about how that was kind of after the match, the feeling in the crowd, and then going up to that main event with the Young Bucks and Guns?
Well, I feel like it was a nice course correction to throw the Acclaimed out there after the Brit match. I mean, I didn't really get a sense that, like, people weren't booing during the Chainsaw match, but I think everybody was just kind of rolling their eyes. And the Brit match just wasn't, there was nothing exciting about it. There was nothing memorable. So I almost feel like they should have put the Acclaimed out there right after that Chainsaw match just to kind of snap everybody back into reality. I will say I enjoyed the Acclaim. One thing I sort of need to circle back and give some props to is Don Callis. I mean, he had the loudest boos of the night. I could hardly even make out anything he said because people were just relentlessly booing him. But to jump back to your question, I was a little disappointed looking at my watch, seeing like the Bucks and the Gun Club only were going to get like 13 minutes. I'm really
not even
interested to see what happens with the Gun Club. I mean, they have it, whatever that is. And yeah. I think it's cool they were able to kind of step out of the shadow of their dad and sort of do their own thing. So I honestly feel like the Guns and the Bucks could be a pay-per-view match down the road. So maybe they're going to save a little bit of that. But all that to say, I feel like they were able to recover after the Brit match with the Acclaimed and with that main event. I feel like I'm missing something that was right before the main event. But I do feel like they did kind of save themselves. The crowd definitely didn't turn. I definitely feel like they got one back over, which is kind of a miracle given that chainsaw match.
Yeah.
The Guns are a team I've been an advocate for since they were just toiling on Dark. I think they're really good at what they do. Austin Gunn is you know, I'm not, it's more the oddball, but they're just good at what they do. And I think that there is a real upside for Colton, even as a potentially as a singles wrestler. And I mean, there's just a lot I admire about what they bring to their matches. And I feel a little bit like you did when I looked at the clock. I was like, they're not even going to get 10 minutes before this thing, you know, turns into an angle or the show ends. And the lack of hype during the match or during the show for that match stood out to me too. I mean, I'll ask you this, Brad, what was the pop like for the Young Bucks? Did it come across as, you know, Nashville is here to see AEW and the Young Bucks are co-founders, EVPs and big stars, and we're so excited to see them? Or was it less than that?
I think that was kind of a frustrating part for me because I have mixed feelings about the Bucks, but I do enjoy their entrance. I love that theme music they use. But honestly, I was kind of distracted with some kids that were trying to talk to me when the Guns came out. And I think the Bucks sort of, you know, ran out and surprised them. So the Bucks, to me, didn't really get much of a grand entrance. It was like, oh, hey, all right, here we go. And I've never really gotten the Bucks. Like, I've enjoyed some of their matches. But tonight I was thinking, I was like, I don't even know if I know what either of their voices sound like. I don't watch their YouTube show, but
yeah.
I wish those guys had more of an identity other than just, hey, we put on some really good tag matches.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I feel the same way. What happened after the show went off the air? You know, we had the angle with FTR and all that, but we heard someone called up before you and said that Tony Khan spoke to the audience that he's donating the proceeds. Was there anything else off air of note either before or after the show?
No, there was a Ring of Honor match to start off with. Matt Sydal beat, escaping me. But one strange thing was they really didn't hype up Rampage. And, like, I don't know if they announced anything on TV, but it was kind of like I didn't know if I wanted to stay. It was like I'd really like to know what I'm getting into. But I will say you love good wrestling, Commander and Ray Fenix open up Rampage, and it was a – total banger. If everybody that stayed was on their feet for that, and it was really, really a fantastic match. I hope that's not too bad of a spoiler, but watch Rampage.
No, it's not too. It is not too much of a spoiler to say there's a good match you should watch. That's cool. Was there any other chance or any other reactions from the crowd that stood out to you, either as surprising or more intense than you expected?
Nothing surprising. I kind of felt like everyone was reacting the way Tony Khan would probably want everyone to react. There wasn't any mutiny. There were no – I don't even think I saw a CM Punk shirt. The merch game was very weak. I knew you were going to ask, Wade. And the only talent-specific shirts I saw were the Acclaimed, Orange Cassidy, and MJF. Everything else was like generic AEW merch. And I was just like, wow. Just blows my mind.
I do not understand. I mean, I just don't understand how that happens in this company.
And, you know, the Don Callis little bit was great. I he's so loathsome. He's such a wonderful heel, and it's so fun to boo that guy.
Wait, I want to ask about the Kenny Omega sit-down interview with Jim Ross. Was the crowd glued, you know, just staring at the screen, soaking up what's happening? Were they distracted? How did that go?
Well, first off, before the angle started, it just seemed odd. Like, I love K Kenny as a wrestler, but as a personality, I don't claim to get it. And then JR, I mean, that was just some weird energy. And then after Kenny got attacked, like, those cutaways to JR was just like, what in the hell? Like, this is like an SNL skit or something.
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah. That was odd.
But, I mean, people were paying attention to it. But I've got to say, the pre-tape thing with Cole and MJF was just, I don't know. I don't know how it came across on TV, but the people in the crowd were eating it up. It was great.
How was the response to Jack Perry with the brief vignette that aired about the FTW title? Were people booing when he came on the screen or not really reacting?
Oh, I may have missed that.
Maybe they didn't air it too. Sometimes they don't air everything.
There must not have been much of a reaction if they showed that. One complaint I've got to throw out is I'm actually going to All In next week, and I am, like, super frustrated with this card. Like, the MJF and Cole matches, of course, is a great headliner, but, like, I feel like this thing for being so big is missing, like, some really marquee one-on-one matchups. Like, when they were announcing all these multi-man matches, I was like, what are you doing? Like, these are Dynamite matches.
I know.
Two singles matches on the show.
Yep.
Two.
Yep. And I don't know how people are going to feel about Kenny Omega not being in a showcase singles match. You know, and MJF and Cole doesn't feel – it's entertaining. Crowds are responding. You know, MJF's getting chants and moves over. They're selling merch. But does it have the headline show of the biggest wrestling crowd ever, as to quote someone on Dynamite tonight? No, it doesn't have that. It doesn't have that vibe. It doesn't feel serious enough for that either. But if the rest of the show was more serious and, you know, more, you know, like I kind of imagine it'd be like these legacy dream matches as opposed to being a storyline driven, I think for that setting that would have worked, especially back to back with All Out. But I don't know. It's a weird approach they're taking. Joel, expand on your thoughts on that.
Yeah. You know, I think that for the show overall, All In is going to be a very good wrestling show. I think that there's going to be a lot of really entertaining matches, but, you know, everybody's going to want time. They're going to try to get a lot of people on the show. There may, who knows, I wouldn't be surprised if they throw in a battle royal of some sort to get more people on the show. But, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely in line with you that it's not the show, that this card is not exactly what you would have predicted. You know, when they first announced this, that, you know, a lot of people, the foregone conclusion was we were going to see another Kenny Omega Will Ospreay match. We didn't get that. But some of the other stuff that they've had here, you know, I'm okay with. You know, the Stadium Stampede match, I mean, you got to do it, right? You're in Wembley Stadium. You're going to be in the biggest spot. I mean, I'm looking forward to that. I think that's going to be entertaining. You know, Will Ospreay, Chris Jericho, I mean, Will Ospreay is, you know, one of the best in the world out there against Chris Jericho, and they're gonna have a good match. Chris is gonna be super motivated. He's gonna want to have a really good match. But to your point, Wade, that there's nothing that's really has that big emotional hook. It's just, you know, you're gonna see a lot of stars and you're gonna see a lot of good wrestling. You know, and there'll be, I would be surprised if there was really much of any negative reviews after the show because of just how much good wrestling there's going to be there. It's just these matches on here, even though just not knowing the angles that they may or may not shoot on this show, there's just not a lot to look forward to after this. You know, it's really just getting people their spots on there. The FTR versus Young Bucks, third, you know, in their trilogy that Excalibur is trying to push on commentary, just doesn't translate into being this huge epic match. I mean, I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be entertaining. It's going to be in the 4-star range. But, you know, I'm not really that emotionally invested in what's going on there.
All right. I will throw back to you, Brad. Anything else you want to add to anything we talked about or anything else from your live experience tonight?
No, I had fun, and it was great for AEW to come back to Nashville because I've been to the other two previous Dynamites that were at a smaller venue, and those were not packed out by any means. So when they announced they were at Bridgestone, I was like, wow, that's kind of a gamble. But I think everybody had fun for the most part tonight, and everybody should go VIP. It's a great podcast. Wade, you're doing some great work, so it's an honor to join you tonight.
Well, thank you so much. Appreciate the kind words, and if you attend a show again, obviously let us know and call in or email anytime.
All right, you guys. Have a good night. Thank you.
Yeah, you too. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Joel, let's get some emails in here about the show. I'll go first to, let's see here, Will Cooling, a PW Torch contributor. He says, the 20 to 30 minutes with the low-energy Kenny Omega interview, half-assed Bullet Club beatdown, amateurish Hangman Page promo, setting and content, nonsensical Chris Jericho turn, throwaway beatdown to kick off Darby Allin and Nick Wayne tag match, an awful Sting promo may honestly be one of the worst stretches of pro wrestling television I've ever watched. And then we got the Texas Chainsaw match. Honestly, WCW in 2000 levels at several points during the show. I'm even getting some feedback from people in AEW wanting to know what I thought and thinking it was a horrible, awful show too. As I'm doing the post show here.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say. Our ProWrestling.net poll, not getting any better. Let's hit refresh here. Well, slightly better. Awful went from 43% down to 40%, giving it an F. But the disappointing show D grade went up to 38. So we're at 78% strong thumbs down, 13% thumbs in the middle, 8% thumbs up. Not good. I mean, Will Cooling framing it that way. I mean, a low energy Kenny Omega interview. Low energy isn't even the word. It's just weird. You know,
it was so weird. I mean, I want to talk about this one too, because I mean, it just the whole production value of that to start off with was just so amateur, you know, really like, you know, that it's like a bad, it's not shot well. When my first instinct is this in front of a green screen? This doesn't look. Is this really at Daly's place? And then they cut to some more angles, and they showed it really was at Daly's place. But having just that flat lighting, it's not really a dynamic angle. They're not really positioned in any sort of dynamic way. When this was supposed to be an important, like, we're supposed to take seriously the Jim Ross sit down interviews, and this one just kind of felt like really just thrown together, like just trying to get it on the show, because the pacing and the cuts of this was just bizarre. The frenetic pacing of just it cuts there and then it cuts back and then it cuts to Jim Ross and it cuts back to showing both of them, and it just felt like there was a lot cut out of there and just trying to condense it down to fit it onto the show. And then just the whole, like, the beatdown part of it just was awkward because of just that setting just right in the middle of Daly's place, and then Jim Ross is standing there, and of course that's going to be some memes online later of him just kind of looking over and no one's there to help Kenny. And then just the whole Hangman Page, I mean, was that the interview that they shot that, you know, supposedly he was supposed to move away from the building? That he was just standing, I mean, clearly not at a hospital, just standing outside the arena in front of one of the loading docks with just an ambulance. They said, just turn on the lights here and just leave the doors open, and that's going to convey he's at the hospital, you know, drinking a beer again. I mean, and it was just so, like, I don't know. I mean, it's just, again, we talk about the stuff with the Elite of, man, these are some really talented guys. We've seen them do great work in the past. But we keep going back to this whole, like, weird tone, weird pacing, inconsistent character stuff, that just it just takes away from it when it could be so much more. And so all I can go back to is, man, it's just like all these a lot of these great wrestlers, it's like they're given just, hey, go out there, get yourself over, do what you want to do. And, you know, there's just not that consistency. And this was really one of the things that actually bothered me the most on the show.
The Hangman Page was weird. The Don Callis backstory with Kenny Omega was weird. And they Jim Ross rightfully points out, this guy hit you, you know, jabbed you in the head with a screwdriver. Mm-hmm. And they show it. It's like, that just shouldn't be happening in a wrestling show. That's too, again, it's like an amplified version of a pile driver on the ramp. It's too big of a thing to just be a thing. Like, and you just move on from it. So they point it out. And Callis is like, yeah, he might have done that, but he is Uncle Callis, he is Uncle Don. I don't want my existence to be about revenge with Callis in my head. And Ross said, well, it looks like he's moved on from you. And then, you know, Kenny just goes, well, I'm going to take his cash call away from him. And then Callis interrupted him. I mean, I don't even know what the average viewer would think about Kenny after that aired. Like, what the actual message was and what the emotions are that we're supposed to be feeling about Kenny and his relationship with Don Callis. It just came across like a lot of things with Kenny, just kind of weird.
Nonchalance.
It's just,
Well, it's just so much more disappointing when you know that all of these people are capable of changing the tone and giving an amazing, you know, A-plus performance on this stuff, where Kenny, so much of his career in AEW has been this very nonchalant, almost in a malaise. And yes, he's had really great matches. Cannot take that away from him. But the character development has not been there since the beginning. And when you watch the New Japan version of Kenny Omega, even when he just went back for Wrestle Kingdom, I mean, that's what people are looking for, is that the Terminator, the cleaner, the guy who is so laser focused in on what he's doing. And that's what gets you behind that guy, is that you know how much he trains for this, how much he works and thinks about wrestling and wanting to give the best performance possible. He's one of the best out there. And so when you see, like, just the very nonchalant, maybe that is, you know, how he is more or less, you know, as a person and not the character Kenny Omega. But what people want to see is someone who is just so dialed in, so concerned about their craft, so just wanting to be the best. And we just keep getting this kind of, I don't want to be too mad at Don. I don't want to, you know, don't want to have to get too involved in this. You know, that's not what people are looking for.
No, it's not. All right, we got lots of emails, so I want to keep rolling through here so we don't go too long with the show. JB in Jacksonville says, that was an absolute fever dream of a show, and not in a good way. A quick note to say that the show felt really dated for a stretch tonight, with Jericho inserting himself into yet another hot angle, Sting with a strange long promo, Jeff Jarrett and the Hardys all in the same roughly one-hour window. My favorite part of Dynamite was when the Texas Chainsaw Massacre segment was limping across the finish line, and Taz let out a long sigh and said, "Welp, that was something." I'll be ordering All In for the atmosphere and historic. Taz is really worth keying in on. He sends little messages. I'll be ordering All In for the atmosphere and the historical significance, but man, am I not feeling this card. Thanks, and everyone, go VIP. P.S., since you mentioned that in classic audio, I just listened to the 18 years ago audio show with Bruce Mitchell, where you both agreed Chris Jericho had, quote, about five more good money-making years in him. That was a really fun road trip listening to this weekend. That is one of the things we do for VIP members, is we put up some of our earliest podcasts going back 20 years. We do it on the 18th anniversary of the shows, and so we put up a handful of those each week. And I get caught up listening back to some of those things. And as I told Jason the other week, I think it was when I was doing a show with Jason, I was like, I try to figure out who my sources were for all this backstage information, because it's been so long. Like, I'm trying to piece together, like, oh, did I, who was I talking to then, or who gave me those pieces of information? So I have my own game that I play when I listen back to that. But so go VIP, people. A lot of people saying go VIP. You should go VIP. All right. Fever dream of a show, and not in a good way. Talk about Jericho for a second, Joel. I mean, speaking of Jericho, and, you know, our prediction 18 years ago, he had 5 years left in him. Jericho is a survivor. There's a lot of things he's really highly respected for in terms of his wrestling smarts, putting together a match. He's certainly a polarizing figure, to use kind of the word du jour, in terms of, you know, there's things he says outside of wrestling and things that, you know, politics and territorial protection and that kind of thing that lead to, you know, him having a bit of a controversial reputation behind the scenes at different times. But on air, yeah, he's doing this Don Callis segment. There's aspects of it I like. They're pulling from history with this long relationship, and Don Callis is really over. I liked the JAS segment last week. We had Sammy Guevara hitting that note last week that said, I'm different than the rest here. You know, we go way back, and I feel, you know, more of a bond in AEW with you, you know, than some of the other people here, given, you know, that they've done so much together since AEW launched. And that was it. And then we had the follow-up to that with, you know, Sammy being the guy who would come out to Jericho's side. But there were still aspects of the story that I just thought, you know, booking IQ-wise, were lower than you would expect from a Chris Jericho segment. How are you feeling about Jericho and the push he gets and the TV time he gets and the autonomy that he has, clearly, and how he's doing with that autonomy?
Yeah, I mean, Chris is, you know, one of the really most talented guys, you know, as far as knowing how to get himself over, carry himself at like a star, have really entertaining segments. So there's absolutely a spot for Chris to be regularly on the show, you know, even as he continues to age into his 30-year career. He just, you know, he's aligning himself into something with Don Callis, where he senses, you know, this guy, as you hear from the people who call into the show, he gets the most heat on the show, you know, and so he can position himself against, you know, one of these guys, and that's going to elevate his positioning and continue to keep him relevant. I think that Chris continues to put on, you know, really good performances. You know, depending on who his opponent is, I think he can have really good matches. I would expect nothing different against Will Ospreay. That Will's not going to, you know, he's not going to have the high, super high energy, high pace match. He's going to adapt his style, and he's going to be able to have, you know, a Will Ospreay match with Chris Jericho. And I expect that that's going to be really good. But, you know, Chris, what's hard with him is that he's a guy who's always been trying to reinvent himself and get over different phrases and get over different eras of himself. But right now I just kind of sense that, you know, he had the Inner Circle, and then Jericho Appreciation Society was, you know, just another take on the Inner Circle, getting rid of a couple guys, swapping in some other people for him to work with some younger people, which is very admirable that he's working with and trying to get those younger people to another level, especially Sammy Guevara and Daniel Garcia. But I just want to see, you know, more, you know, not a new character from Chris. I don't want to see a new Painmaker. I don't want to see a new thing like that, but just more of like, more just kind of a dialed in story for him that I just didn't like that the way that this one kind of played out here with him. Yeah, I'm going to go with you, Don. And then, or him kind of saying, maybe, yeah, we'll see. And then, yeah, I'll go with you. And then, oh, what's this poster? Oh, no, I'm not going to go with you. I think that Chris could do a better job of kind of cleaning up some of those things and just having more of that serious story. Again, I've said that all these people know how to do this, and they've done it in the past at very high levels to where people still talk about these things. They always talk about the Alpha versus Omega thing with Kenny Omega that they did at Wrestle Kingdom. And it's like, you can be dialed in and have that more serious character. And so I think Chris just needs more of a direction that if he's not going to be going into the championship picture, you know, what is the main purpose, the main goal for him moving forward?
Is it too much to have Don Callis be as a central figure in the Kenny Omega story and also in the Chris Jericho story right now? Because I feel like these things probably would be better on separate tracks at separate times, not overlapping practically back to back.
Yeah, and that's the weird thing that's going on right now, is that there's people have multiple feuds and people are intertwined into different things. And I think that there is a way to make that work, but it's just weird, you know, seeing Darby Allin kind of having his thing against the Embassy and Swerve Strickland. And then he goes on to the other show, and now he's got his feud with Christian Cage and Luchasaurus and a different thing going on. And then the same thing with Don Callis is, it's like, well, how are these things connected? How are they different that we see Don Callis is aligning himself now with the Bullet Club and they're attacking Kenny Omega. And then he goes and does this other thing with Chris Jericho, and then they have their segment. You know, there is a way to follow it up and have all this stuff connect with one another. But right now it's just kind of weird that it's separate, because they want to use Don in multiple spots on the show because he gets the most heat. But it also just kind of creates some confusion as to what is all this that's going on. And I'd like to see more of it be connected.
All right, let's move to Mika, a VIP member from Cincinnati, Ohio. He says, hi, Wade, hope you're doing well. I was going to call, but I wasn't sure if the switchboard was going to be fixed or not. It was, but your email's fine. It seems that tonight's show is finally setting up some angles for All In London. I'd be lying if I wasn't a little concerned. It feels like we're going to get a bunch of glorified tag team matches for this show. For example, I'd much rather see Jay White and Kenny Omega one-on-one. It seems like they're going with a six-man tag match with Hangman, Ibushi, and Omega versus Jay White, Juice, and Takeshita. BCC versus Best Friends, etc. A stampede match to illustrate another multi-person match. What are your thoughts on all these matches with multiple people? Is it just a way to get everyone on the show, or lazy booking? And finally, do you think we get Jericho and Ospreay one-on-one, or will it be Jericho and Sammy versus Ospreay and a partner? Can't wait to hear your thoughts. Everybody go VIP. It will change your life. And he doesn't just say that. He adds 4 exclamation marks, which means you better see if it changes your life, right? PWTorch.com/go VIP. All right.
I would say that does. You know, Definitely. I mean, my first introduction into like the more kind of insider, more thoughtful, you know, college level of way of thinking about wrestling was through the Torch, you know, and first finding on the live cast and then going VIP and starting to listen to more, you know, the Bruce Mitchell audio shows and then listening to Stuff the Fix that came later. I mean, definitely it got me much more involved in wrestling and thinking about it on a different level than just, you know, watching SmackDown and Raw.
Well, thank you. Very good. So, two Miko's questions. Jericho Ospreay one-on-one. He asked that. What do you think?
I mean, we're getting that singles match. I don't think that that's going to turn.
Is it Jericho and Sammy against Ospreay and a partner? Like, what do you, because I don't think they officially announced Jericho Ospreay one-on-one yet.
Okay, sure. Yeah, no, I think it's going to be a one-on-one match. Yeah. I mean, right now that they just have such a lack of singles matches on this show that, I mean, you just got to go with that and have that be the match there. Don't water down a Will Ospreay match at Wembley Stadium.
Right, yeah, I agree. But, yeah, I mean, Mika emailed or, you know, brought it up in his email, but we already talked about it. It feels very tag team heavy, and I do think it's to get everybody on the show. I think that's part of it, and it's also, I assume they're going to do angles in these tag matches to split them off into singles matches for All Out and try to, you know, get a 2-for-1 out of people's wallets in a, you know, roughly 1 week stretch.
Yeah, I think we're going to see quite a few angles here. I mean, I would expect to see something happen probably in that 0 hour, you know, that there's probably going to be something amongst MJF and Adam Cole, as we've been teased for multiple weeks. You know, I could see a scenario where maybe Adam Cole does a turn on MJF, and that leads to a more polarizing reaction of we see a baby-faced MJF versus a solidified heel Adam Cole. And I wouldn't be opposed to that, you know, in that atmosphere. I think that MJF is going to be hugely popular with this crowd. So to get something of people more invested, to have a more definitive, you know, which side are people on, wouldn't be a bad thing. But I do think that a lot of these other matches are just going to, you know, lead up to other things at All Out. Like I, you know, facetiously was saying before that there's just not a lot to look forward to at All Out right now. It's kind of a lot of the more kind of middle of the card, undercard stuff that's being added to that show. But I think that there's a possibility you see it, Kenny Omega versus Takeshita at All Out, which will be a great singles match. You know, you could also, there's been rumors of Jon Moxley versus Orange Cassidy. That's something that you could see at All Out. And then whatever happens with the world championship, that's, you know, kind of the most interesting thing for me is, you know, do they make the title change or, you know, if at all is CM Punk involved? They still haven't officially announced the CM Punk Samoa Joe match for All In. So where does he fall in when they go back to his home city of Chicago, which is definitely going to be something that Tony Khan doesn't want to miss out on, where he's going to get the most babyface reaction out of anywhere that he could possibly go. So he's definitely going to want to put him in a top position.
All right. Speaking of Will Ospreay and Jericho, was on in St. Louis. Do you think they're doing Will Ospreay versus Jericho at All In? Because Jericho's trying to prove he doesn't have the most enormous ego in AEW, and he'll put over Will in his homeland in front of 80,000. I mean, is that the finish? Maybe Callis interferes? What do you think?
Just put Will over. I mean,
It's not like Jericho has an undefeated record to protect lately.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm just tired of the distraction finishes. And I mean, just when you have a show like All In, I mean, just go with a lot of straight finishes unless you have a really good reason for a distraction that's going to lead to something else, you know, at All Out. But otherwise, I mean, with only two singles matches on here, just go straight away with Will Ospreay getting the win. Just he's the best guy out there right now. You know, defeating an older Chris Jericho.
Zon also says, I don't know if either you know or remember Leatherface has been involved in wrestling with USWA and in Japan. I'm willing to bet AEW's happy to get the money they got from Old School Tennessee Wrestling. Foolish bit, but it was a foolish bit on tonight's show. I mean, Leatherface does have a history in that region, in the USWA. But, yeah.
Sure.
I mean, there comes a point where you're like, I know the networks and sponsors put pressure on you to do things, but WWE's done it too, you know, and the zombie stuff. I mean, going way back to RoboCop with Jim Herd, it just, sometimes you just got to go, this doesn't fit with what we're doing artistically. It doesn't fit the tone. It's putting us in an awkward position, and we have to find a different way to go about this. All right, his third point is, after watching tonight's show, I recognize Eddie Kingston is kind of the spot that LA Knight and WWE had, where both guys are mega over with live crowds, but at the same time, they rub people the wrong way backstage. Joel, talk about Eddie Kingston coming out of G1. He's back. Fans definitely like him. Sometimes absence makes the heart grow fonder. What do you think of Eddie's role and how he's being utilized and what should happen going forward?
Yeah, when Eddie first came into AEW, you know, I was just thinking, you know, this guy's probably going to be more in a manager position. He speaks really well on the mic, but he's never made it at that bigger level. He was in Chikara, you know, he was in some of the other smaller promotions, but we never saw him at that major level like a WWE. So what he's been able to do thus far in AEW, he has vastly overachieved. You know, what most people, you know, except for people close to him, really thought that he was able to do. And it's been a great story for him. And then also to be able to go to the G1 this past year, and he had some great matches there, but, you know, it wasn't the same G1 as it has been in other years. But I definitely think that this guy has some momentum, you know, going slipping right back into that feud that he had with Claudio Castagnoli that was kind of put on hold for him to go to Japan and then make that appearance, is that he's definitely a fresh face coming back to the roster. And so I think that there's plenty of stuff that they can do with him now, just having him coming off of, you know, the stuff he was doing in Japan.
All right, let's keep rolling here, and we'll go to Zach in Texas. Okay, let's see if he can turn this into a positive. Let's get the bad out of the way. As a rule, I hate sponsorship gimmick matches like the Pizza Company Battle Royal or Zombie Lumberjack matches. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre match was no different. I don't mind the Jeff Jarrett special, but the match was too much. Outside of that, though, Dynamo is great. The Mad King is back. Stadium Stampede is back. The Golden Lovers are back, and they're bringing an ass-kicking cowboy with them. They legitimately got me invested in seeing Jericho get even with Callis. The All-In card is looking really good. Joker Sting is amazing. Sting is really living his best life. Billy Gunn is going to get an absurd, just an absolutely absurd pop when he unretires. MJF and Adam Cole continue to be the best thing in wrestling. MJF's sincere babyface promo was amazing. There's legit mystery surrounding how this is all going to shake out, which is how you sell a pay-per-view, and I can't wait to see it. So is Zach highlighting genuine positives on this show, or do you agree with some of that, or not?
Well, I think that he points out a lot of things that did happen, but I just don't think that they were all presented in that way. You know, like he talks about that having Kenny Omega teaming again with Kota Ibushi and Hangman Page. I mean, yeah, that's a really big deal. That should feel really special. But just the way it was presented and the way it was announced just was kind of fell flat. You know, it's like, yeah, we're presenting it. We're not really promoting it as this really, really big deal because there's just so much that they're trying to fit in there. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot of really good things. There's a lot of good stuff that's kind of beyond the All-In show, but just the way that they've been promoting it and it was presented on this show would just felt very lackluster.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Zach, you gave it a shot. I actually think Billy Gunn will get a big pop. I don't think he's wrong about
it. Oh, he
that.
Will. Yeah, yeah, he will. Yeah, definitely. That stuff is over. I mean, Billy, you know, he's having a great time, you know, doing this role and just still being a part of wrestling at this point. So I think it's cool what he's doing. You know, I think that you could, of course, give some time to some other people. But, you know, the crowd is really eating it up. And I think that when that does happen, people will really enjoy it. We'll have fun.
The MJF Cole situation, what's your official prediction on how this plays out, and how would you like to see it play out if it's different than what you think will happen?
Yeah, I mean, if I'm to give an official prediction, I think that in that tag team match, like I was kind of mentioning before, is that I do see a scenario where Adam Cole, you know, maybe he does team up with the sad, pathetic Roderick Strong and the other ROH castoffs. And, you know, they form some sort of group together where they turn on MJF or something. Some sort of miscommunication happens in that match, in the opening match, which then leads to a more definitive, we're cheering for MJF, he's the babyface, he's our scumbag, you know, versus Adam Cole, who, you know, he's turned on this guy that we really like. And that's kind of what I think is going to happen. What I want to happen, I mean, I guess, you know, something more or less along those lines is that, you know, God, they don't need to win the ROH Tag Team Championship. I mean, just dissolve some of these championships and just move away from them. But I just want to see something where it's not just hey, yeah, we're best friends. We got this other, we go to Outback Steakhouse together. We go and do these, we go to trampoline places together. I want to see it just a baby face versus a heel. It's very clearly defined who we're supposed to cheer for, who we're supposed to boo, and we just get a clearly defined finish at the end of that. And then it leads us into we wanting to know what happens next. You know, we want to see the follow-up on Dynamite. We want to know what's going to happen at All Out. So something that's, you know, makes a bold statement after that show. So it's nothing that's wishy-washy, distraction finish type stuff, but something that's really going to get us interested in seeing the next chapter as we go into the fall with AEW.
I'm trying to think what else Zach said here. We talked about Joker Sting. MJF is a sincere babyface. He put that over. Golden Lover's back, which, by the way, does not mean a lot to a lot of AEW fans. And AEW, I do not
really
believe.
Really too bad.
Yeah, and they're not gonna do a good job explaining it either, because that's not their forte. All right, let's go to JB in Detroit. Doesn't the fact that Jericho is going to join the Don Callis family, if not for seeing the portrait of him being portrayed, still make him a heel? I mean, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Number two, is Ospreay now a member of the Don Callis family, or is he more of a mercenary who has a history with Kenny?
I mean, not explained. You know, we don't know for sure, but certainly it seems like maybe mercenary, you know, because of the stuff with Kenny. That would be my best explanation.
Three, I'm not sure if the average viewer took Sting's callback to his Joker character in TNA as, quote, taking things to a dark place, as Excalibur framed it, or something rather goofy and random. I think goofy and random. I just don't think Joker Sting resonated enough with today's wrestling audience to make that connection. And as a side note, I felt like a bit of a TNA throwback show with Joker Sting appearing and Jeff Jarrett and Jeff Hardy in that gimmick.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
that was exactly my thoughts. It just felt like such a TNA throwback. And there's times because, you know, they share a lot of the same wrestlers, you know, that reminds you of that type of stuff. So the Joker Sting, man, I mean, I just saw a little clip of that, of Sting's face that he made to scare Prince Nana. I mean, I don't know.
I know. That was the worst part. I mean, you hate to tell a veteran, hey, let's do a retake at the very end, but I might have with that face, because it looked like something was just – something he ate didn't set right. It had a weird it just wasn't a great finish to that. And yeah, I mean, Joker Sting, that should be a big deal if you introduce Joker Sting. There should be, like, a whole story about that and not just – TNA, again, it wasn't Hogan Andre, it wasn't Austin Vince McMahon, it wasn't Mick Foley. It's like, there's certain things you can do callbacks on and other things you can't. And this just wasn't justified. Number four from JB. Does the Texas Chainsaw Deathmatch seem out of place in Tennessee? I also think this match was too weird and insignificant to have on Dynamite, and I'd consider myself to have a greater ability to suspend disbelief than most. I'd accept this on Rampage or on Being the Elite, maybe. WWE doesn't have much room to talk, though, with their Mountain Dew Pitch Black Lights Out Mountain Dew Pitch Black Lights Out match at Royal Rumble with Wyatt and Knight earlier this year. That was earlier this year. God. I don't think people are going to like when sponsors dictate what happens on a wrestling show. I just don't think fans like that. I think they think sponsors are there to support the wrestling show but not dictate what happens or steer them in weird directions. I don't think this was the worst offender of things I've seen. I think the zombie thing was more corny, but this was not good. He says, I don't know what's worse, the fact that Leatherface came out and didn't unveil himself, as if we're all supposed to believe a chainsaw-wielding maniac would somehow be allowed to be in the arena, and that somehow another title belt appeared on TV due to this monstrosity. I could practically hear Todd Martin's head explode. It's hard to fully fault TK and AEW for this, however, if it is something their TV partner in WBD pushed for cross-promotion. There does come a point where you should, you know, have the clout with your company, with your partner, to say, you know, we've got to find a different way to do this than what you're suggesting. It's just too random. I mean, maybe Tony did and they just pushed back hard. I don't know on that.
Or they thought it would just be fun, wacky, entertaining stuff. I mean, yeah, I was kind of hoping, like, oh, is this going to be, you know, they're coming out there and it's like, oh God, they're doing this. But, you know, hey, is it going to be a wrestler or something? And they throw the chainsaw to the side and pull off a mask. But I'm like, no, that build is way too scrawny to be a wrestler.
Yep. All right. Number six, MJF can cut one hell of an impassioned and inspired babyface promo. The guy really is a five-tool player. I don't even know if we can fully say that about Roman Reigns yet, as he hasn't truly had a truly successful babyface run with the crowd behind him. Well, I think that'll come.
Yeah.
I think we'll get that, yeah. He also says, I wonder if Tony Khan yelling at MJF and Adam Cole in his office angle was a subtle reference intended to address the latest CM Punk backstage drama that Wade and others reported on this week. That did cross my mind, if Tony Khan is trying to show that he has that he can yell and be a strong boss who stands up to rebels who are disrespecting or disregarding his or dismissing his sense of authority in the company.
Yeah, I mean, that was the connection that I got was, you know, he's holding people accountable. He's yelling at them behind closed doors. But I was like, well, what is he trying to say with that? Because then it's, you know, then he comes out and he's the pushover boss where he's like, oh, yeah. And MJF is just like, oh, yeah, we were just talking about, you know, whatever he said to just kind of throw it off. And then you see like the hallway of his office, like, I don't know. Like, I know that there was some connection there, but what was he trying to say about it? You know, what was – or was it just sloppily done? I don't know.
I don't either. Seven, I really like how they're weaving in the MJF Cole 0-hour ROH tag team title match with Aussie Open, the MJF Cole AEW World Title main event, and the possibility of a turn from either of them, and Roderick Strong and the Kingdom looking on in the periphery so seamlessly for Wembley. Yeah, it's the Cole MJF 0-hour thing. I mean, it is from a standpoint of getting people to tune into the pre-show and then – you know they can watch that free even if they're not planning to watch the event, and then maybe running a big angle in that match, which then leads to people buying the pay-per-view. I mean, Tony Khan pays attention to that stuff, and he's going to know, you know, if the number of buys after that angle, the number of orders was more than typically during the pre-show. So, you know, it's certainly an intentional strategy, Joel.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, to do something there. That's why my prediction is to do an angle there. But, yeah, I mean, the way I want to see it is just, you know, I think Adam Cole would be better positioned as a heel and have MJF as, you know, not total babyface, but your scumbag type of babyface. And I think that would be a new, fresher direction for AEW moving forward.
Yeah, yep. Okay. He says, also, what is the point of even having these women's qualifying matches for the title at Wembley? It was so obvious who's going to be in the match. They should have just announced it. It made sense. These matches seem like pure filler. Yeah, I mean, they just didn't have big enough names in them, Joel. I mean, it felt rushed, and obviously we knew who the four people on the poster were going to be.
Yeah, you didn't think that the bunny was going to be that last spot in All In?
No, and why is she getting up even within a sniff of, I mean, she shouldn't be within a carat's length of, I'm trying to do a funny thing. I don't know. It's not working.
There's no point other than to find a way to have a match, you know, on Dynamite. That was it.
Yeah. At this point, with House of Black returning to beat down the Acclaimed and the disrespect to Billy Gunn's boots, I think it's meant to be obvious that Billy's retirement is part of the storyline, for sure. I wonder if there's time to build to the Trails title rematch for All In or All Out, if they wait until Grand Slam in New York City. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I haven't thought exactly through. There's just so many, you know, kind of big shows. But I'm assuming they want this match to be at Wembley.
Which match specifically?
The Billy Gunn and the Acclaimed against House of Black.
Okay. I was thinking All Out for Chicago because the Acclaimed got such a big reaction last year at All Out.
I just think that everybody wants to be on the Wembley show. I don't think Tony Khan wants. I mean, what else would House of Black and the Acclaimed do then? I mean, I don't think they're going to leave them off Wembley.
Sure.
Yeah. Speaking of anticipating matches, when will we get the FTR and Bucks versus Bullet Club Gold and Guns after tonight? Maybe the collision before All In. Yeah, I mean, that'd be weird. FTR and the Bucks, not exactly best friends behind the scenes, teaming up against the full Bullet Club Gold. Do you think they're doing that?
Sure, you could throw it on one of the shows, but it just feels weird because the way they built it up was just kind of just hasn't had that emotional investment in seeing this match. And so just having them kind of like, we respect you guys and, you know, we'll be there for you, but, you know, we're also going to fight each other to see who the best is. It just feels kind of weird, but definitely I could see that, you know, that could be a Dynamite main event or something. Sure.
All right, let's break away from mailbag for a second because we got another caller here. Error code 434. I saw that you showed up and pushed one. We'll put you on the show here. Welcome to the show. Go ahead and state your name and the city you're calling from.
This is Keith from Virginia.
Hey, Keith, welcome. Yeah, what's on your mind about tonight's Dynamite?
You guys hit, you know, most of the major points. So I guess what I had on my mind at the moment is the fact that Tony Khan is just a fascinating guy. He's fascinating.
Yeah.
Wrestling promoters in general are fascinating, but he has his own, he's got a lot going on there. For a guy who studies the wrestling industry the way he has, why does he have such blind spots for the things that seemingly didn't work? You would think he'd know that type of thing. Like,
yeah.
the leather face thing, immediately I thought of RoboCop in WCW. Mm. It's
zombie.
There's no reason to ever do that, like, ever. If you were going to do it, have one of your own on-air characters take off the mask and show it was them. Don't imply that that's actually the character Leatherface. I don't know how that gets on TV. For a guy who's so focused on in-ring work and in-ring product, why do you even have the bunny on your roster? I'm sorry, no offense to her, but, I mean, that's your call as a boss to not hire bad wrestlers. Like, you're doing everybody a disservice, including her, by continuing to come out that are just not up to TV standard. Like, if in order to fix the women's division, what you would need to do is just go back to basics. Pick your best female wrestlers and then create stories for them. Like, pare things down. It's not that complicated. It's not easy, but I hate to pick on the bunny like that, but there's no reason for her to be there. There's just no reason.
Yeah.
And you have people walking around backstage, walking on eggshells, intimidated, afraid to, you know, seemingly speak their mind. But at the same time, has nobody walked up to Tony and gone, hey, buddy, we got to talk. Hey, just respectfully, very respectfully, this is stupid. You shouldn't do A, B, C, and D. And here are the reasons why.
Yeah.
Here are the examples from history why you should never do these things. Why would we do these? Can I ask you that, sir? And get an answer from him. Like, if he gets upset, then, you know, he gets upset. But this show was terrible, and I don't understand how that gets on the air. It's 4 years of, you know, this company's been around for 4 years. There's no reason to be stumbling around in the dark trying to figure out who you are at this point or try to be WWE at their worst moment. Yeah.
David Bryan, who writes the collision hits and misses and used to cover AW Dark, wrote this. I want to say this is one of the worst shows I've ever seen by a pro wrestling promotion, including the Vince Russo era TNA. As someone who likes AEW a lot, I hope they're ashamed of themselves. I almost feel sick to my stomach. Joel, is this going to be a show that goes down in infamy that people talk about for a long time? Yeah, and maybe, and I'll throw this and I'll throw it. Maybe Keith's wish happens. Maybe this is a show that does prompt some people who have been kind of biting their tongue or dropping more subtle hints to be more overt and approach Tony and say, you know, this isn't good. I mean, but it's so hard to tell Tony that when he's selling 80,000 plus tickets for Wembley, it does empower him to think, I'm doing something right, aren't I?
Well, wouldn't you think like Jim Ross would kind of be that guy too, who's been around in a lot of different places. He's seen a lot of different things. He's seen what works and he's seen what doesn't work. But, you know, I just don't know how much Jim is around or how much he's, you know, invested in you know, what Tony is doing on that booking level. But right. You would just think somebody like that, you know, would really want to say, hey, you know, some of this stuff is not working, or at least give some input on that stuff, because Jim doesn't really have anything to lose. I mean, Tony's not going to fire Jim Ross. I don't see that happening. And so he just feels like somebody who could, you know, approach him. I mean, even someone like Taz too, you know, who's their best commentator. You know, and like you said, he gives these kind of subtle hints sometimes. Sometimes he's less engaged in some things than others. But he just seems like also somebody too who's seen a lot of things, who could give some input on this stuff. You know, there's some of these guys who are not exactly always just trying to get themselves over, who could, you know, kind of look at some of this stuff a little more objectively and talk to Tony about this stuff, that, you know, what is working and what's really not working. Because there's just so many things where I just kept saying to myself, like, but Tony knows better. And I know that from his booking in the past. And so why is he going to these things that are very, very reminiscent of 2000 WCW or the worst years of TNA? I mean, it's just like he knows that, though.
I don't know that he has the bandwidth to put on 5 hours of wrestling a week and promoting back-to-back weekends of major shows while doing everything else that he's involved in and have that attention to detail. And
yeah.
I don't know that has the support team that, you know, will steer him away from this kind of thing.
And he's involved with the Jaguars, you know? And so what's going to happen this fall, too, when his attention is taken away for a major NFL team?
Yeah, yeah. All right, Keith, I'll throw it back to you. Anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like if you have this much to do and things start suffering because of the many jobs you have, there's nothing wrong with finding a person who's experienced and letting them take care of AEW. And there's no, you can still, you know, give them ideas and really book the show in broad strokes, but why does he need to, you know, I don't know. I think we've pretty much beaten that into the ground. It's very baffling. You would think somebody like CM Punk would, you know, since he has his ear so much and has so much power, that he would text him and go, watch Dynamite. I know I'm not on Dynamite, but that was very embarrassing for me. And when you get a chance, if you want to talk about it, you know, you have my number. So it's just, yeah, frustrating. But anyway, thanks, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for calling.
Yeah.
We're here for people to vent on nights like this. All right. Let's go to, let's see. Quick follow-up. It sounds like the Texas Chainsaw match was added at the last second to get some sponsorship money and give it to the Maui Relief Fund. Tony mentioned every dime he got from that match will go to the fund. Some perspective. Maybe not a good match, but a good reason for putting it on. So is Tony Khan feeling some pushback on this? Because at 9:04 p.m. after Dynamite Central Time, he said, we made lots of changes to Dynamite tonight to make tonight's episode Fight for the Fallen, including the Texas Chainsaw game, to help the charity. Is that a cop-out? Is he using – I mean, it's great he's donating to charity, and that was going to happen either way. But this idea that we put on a match that's getting ripped and people in the company are upset happened. And Tony Khan then says, yeah, but it was for charity. Is there enough sponsorship money came in that Tony couldn't have just sent to Maui otherwise, but not put this thing on his wrestling show? I mean, I don't know that I think that helps. I think it hurts a little bit, Joel, that tweet that Alex just pointed out to him.
So Tony has tweeted about this several times since, you know, since in the middle of Dynamite and afterwards, you tweet about the Fight for the Fallen and the Texas Chainsaw. But the one that I saw before is a little bit different wording, where he says, thank you for everyone for watching AEW now. So this was in the middle of the show. He said, we made changes in recent days to move Fight for the Fallen up to tonight with the Texas Chainsaw game plan we had already signed. But I felt strong about pivoting to get cash to the Maui Food Bank this week. The most important thing, in my opinion, please donate now. So it sounds like they had already had that Texas Chainsaw planned, and then they just moved up for the Fight for the Fallen because of the stuff that was going on in Maui.
So does Tony not have the cash flow to prepay Maui for a sponsorship deal that he's going to then have at a different time, that present on Dynamite at a different time? Like, there's not a rule that says he can't just donate a bunch of money above and beyond the proceeds,
right,
which is basically right, pre-spending the money that he's getting from the sponsorship. Like, I'm not really buying that as a justification to make last second changes to the show. And it wasn't a last second change in the sense that they advertised the Texas Chainsaw match yesterday. I mean, it's not like they inserted it tonight. So this feels a little bit to me like trying to create justification for something that's getting bad reviews. That's how it's going across.
I think at least he's recognizing that's getting really bad reviews, and it's probably something that he should have never had on his show.
Yeah. Okay. Grand Tour Detroit says, so this coffin match a week before Darby faces Christian and Luchasaurus, do you think they will play a part in the finish? And with a win, do you see that pushing Swerve possibly into the main event scene? Yeah. Joel, talk about Darby, Christian, Luchasaurus, Swerve Strickland, everything going on there.
Yeah. Like I said, it's just kind of one of those weird things where he's got two separate things going on right now, and if they can get it to where it connects with one another, great. I think that makes for a better story when this stuff is more linked, instead of, hey, we're just gonna not pretend that that's not happening on this one show, and then he's got a feud with somebody else on another show. So I could see a scenario like that playing out, but yeah, I mean, it's just they've had this match with him announced with Luchasaurus for God, I want to say like for a month or like a few weeks at least. And it's been the only thing that they have announced for this All Out show. So for whatever reason, he's had this match on his mind, and he's wanted to have that out there even before they announced this thing at All In. So I would hope that there's quite a bit of thought putting into how he wants to follow that up.
All right. By the way, Morad on Twitter said, Todd Martin, Wade Keller, love you guys very much, but I want to stay happy this week. So I'm going to miss the fix this week on the account of the impending doom of a Dynamite review, because it was, in fact, bad. That will be on the flagship tomorrow. Everyone can hear this week's fix as our simulcast as the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast flagship. So check that out Thursday night. I am eager to hear what Todd has to say about Dynamite. We might even lead with that on the show tomorrow, depending on other news. Brian Koval on Twitter also said, my thoughts on tonight's AEW is it was a strange show, but it did not fail to entertain. It's not a show for everyone, and they can't do this type of show every week. But the card for All In looks really good. A little bit of everything. To me, a little bit of everything is kind of the opposite of a good lineup. Like, I think, you know, a lot of, you know, like, there's a reason Taco Bell doesn't sell pizzas. You know, I mean, it's like, you know who you are, and
they have the Mexican pizza.
Well,
so they sort of do.
Yeah, okay. So they don't have pepperoni mozzarella pizza. Don't ruin
the guy who doesn't go to Taco Bell.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what I mean. Like, you know, when you go to Target, you don't expect there to be a nightclub in the back with thumping music playing. Hey, you're at Target. You want to go have some drinks and party. Like, it's just like, don't be a little bit of everything for everybody. It's just do what you're good at and what your audience expects. Okay, let's see. We'll probably wrap up here. All right.
Wade, what were you expecting for a card for All In? I mean, like, what was, when you first heard about it and they started moving a lot of tickets, I mean, from your perspective, what were you expecting to see on this show?
Yeah, my initial thought is that they were going to have a kind of a show of legacy dream matches, novelty matches. Like, I mean, I'd thrown out MJF against Sting. Sting's last match ever. If he doesn't win the title, he retires. Do some tease there. MJF as a heel, Sting as a face. I think the crowd at Wembley would be like, oh my God, we're seeing Sting in a world title match main event. It might be his last match. That can sell. It doesn't get in the way of the major on-air storylines you're doing. I was thinking the Hardys against the Young Bucks at one point. I mean, it's not exactly the dream match it once was, considering Matt and Jeff and where they are at this point. But I was like, okay, that might be something. So I was just kind of thinking, oh, we're going to get like kind of dream matches. And then, you know, you throw, you know, Omega and Ospreay on there, or Omega Takeshita, whichever of those two, on and on. You know, I just thought, yeah, just kind of make it almost a standalone show, semi, not like the Tribute to the Troops shows, you know, that are sometimes divorced from storyline and they're just sort of matches where, you know, for this easy audience, you know, cheering and booing, all that. Don't dumb it down, but make it kind of a dream match show that would differentiate it from All Out, which would be a more traditional pay-per-view. So that was my thinking at one point. But, I mean, they have so many options, and it's not like there's just one or two or three ways to make the card great or make it at least very good. So, yeah, that was kind of my thinking.
Yeah.
All right, so I was going to close with Alex from Montreal. He says, this is a pretty chaotic episode of Dynamite, more so than usual, for better and worse. I absolutely loved everything involving Cole, MJF, and neck brace Roddy. Wembley's going to go wild for that kangaroo kick. Speaking of MJF and Adam Cole, was that the first time we've had Tony Khan in a significant dramatic role on Dynamite? He said he never wanted to be a character on the show, but it looks like he may have changed his mind. Do you think this was the first of what may be more Big Boss Tony K segments? And finally, I don't know how else to say it, Britt has regressed as a wrestler. I don't know the answer, but I also don't sense she's getting the reaction she once did either. Something to keep an eye on. All that said, I am really looking forward to All In. Have a great show. This is the thing. I don't think tonight's Dynamite is going to turn like a ton of people off from wanting to see All In. I mean, it's just a big stadium show with a lot of big stars, but it doesn't mean it's not fair for people to be disappointed in it. Do you think we see more of Tony Khan in this role?
I think you'll see it sporadically here and there, but on a consistent basis, I don't think so. And I think that's the right play too, is that, you know, Tony is he's a very unique person. And that shines through when he's on camera, he's very enthusiastic about things, but I just don't think that, you know, with everything else that's going on the show, that's the last thing you need is to have another, you know, authority type figure on there. I think this was really kind of in response to the CM Punk stuff. I mean, that was where my mind went to. And like I said, I don't know what he was trying to say with it, just because of the way it all came off. So I don't want to see him on there consistently. I think it's fine that he goes in front of the crowd and, you know, he says the messages that he wants to because he feels the energy in front of them. He's very excited, but not so much stuff on TV.
Yeah. All right. Very good. Joel, thank you. We had a lot to talk about tonight.
That was really fun, Wade. I really, really, really enjoyed that. You know, after watching not very good, is putting it lightly, way of Dynamite. Some good stuff, a lot of bad stuff on there. But this was definitely a great therapy session to talk through this way. It really genuinely is always a pleasure talking wrestling with you.
Well, thank you so much for being co-host tonight. And we will do this, I hope, in a few weeks again. Joel, enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next time.
Thanks so much, Wade.
Yeah, and thanks to our listeners. And go VIP, pwtorch.com/goVIP, to hear more of what we do throughout the week that a lot of our listeners and emailers have complimented. It might even change your life, too. All right, thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you tomorrow on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, Blue Show, the flagship with Todd Martin, and then I'll be by Friday night covering SmackDown with another post show.